20. Philip paced around their quarters in Atlantis. Martin watched Philip pace. The day had started with an attempt on Britt's life, and had managed to go downhill from there. They had apprehended a suspect, but he was unconscious, so they took him to the doctor, a sorceress named Louisa from 2011, who had found the file hiding in her hospital's database. Louisa woke the man up with some smelling salts, but he was no help. He claimed that he had simply been spending some time on the roof, taking an unsanctioned break from his duties as a masseur, when he saw the arrow materialize out of nowhere and zip away at high speed. He went to the edge of the roof to see where it went, and that's when everyone saw him. It wasn't really a surprise. The arrow had been enchanted, aka programmed, to home in on Britt the Younger, and the man who had fled in a panic from Martin, then been beaten senseless by Nilo, clearly couldn't have done that. Also, the fact that he'd had no bow had puzzled Martin, though he chose not to dwell on it at the time. It was frustrating. They had captured the suspect, and he not only couldn't give them any answers, he had provided them with more questions. The day's summit meetings were largely a discussion of the treatment of non-time travelers, the centerpiece of which was a lengthy presentation by Gwen, detailing the abuses Jimmy had perpetrated on the people of medieval England in an effort to turn it into some sort of enchanted wonderland. That should have interested Philip, since Jimmy had then moved on to trying to abuse Philip and everyone Philip cared about, but he'd been far too preoccupied to pay attention. He was worried about Britt the Younger's safety. It wouldn't have been so bad if everyone else had been as concerned as he was, but he knew they weren't. They didn't totally believe that whoever was trying to kill her could possibly succeed. Gwen was concerned mostly because the attempts were upsetting her friend. Martin was not convinced that there was any danger, but was helping just in case, and because he was Martin and liked some action. Even Britt the Younger hadn't totally bought into his reasoning that she was truly in danger. That left Philip sitting in a huge room full of bored people, slowly going out of his mind. At one of the recesses, Martin and Philip had attempted to confront the president's servant, Nilo. They chose to wait until President Ida was not around. They approached him in the hallway. They decided to start gently. Martin said,
"Hey, Nilo! I just wanted to say that it was really impressive how you ran that guy down today."
Nilo nodded. Martin wasn't sure if he was acknowledging the compliment or simply agreeing with it. Martin continued.
"When he caught him, did you have to be so violent about it?"
"Yes."
Philip said,
"You nearly beat the guy to death."
"You're welcome."
Martin and Philip gaped at him, but before they could formulate a response, Ida joined the conversation.
"Hello, gentlemen. What are we talking about?"
Nilo smiled and said,
"Nothing. These two sorcerers were thanking me for helping them catch the man who tried to kill Britt the Younger."
"That's very nice," Ida said. "But really, you helped them? It seems to me it was more the other way around."
Nilo said,
"True. They were helpful. If..."
He looked at Martin.
"I'm sorry. What was your name again?"
"Martin?"
"If Martin hadn't stepped in, I probably would have had to chase the man quite a bit further before I caught him."
For Philip, the afternoon passed in a paranoid blur, followed by dinner with Martin and Gwen. They discussed their ideas about who was behind it all, which would have been great if the discussion had consisted of something more than all three of them repeatedly announcing that they had no ideas. Now Philip was in his quarters, pacing, running out the clock on a profoundly unsatisfying day, and Martin was watching him do it. Whether or not Martin found that at all satisfying, Philip couldn't say. Philip walked to one end of the room and examined the arrow that had been fired at Britt. She hadn't wanted it, so Martin grabbed it, explaining that it was cool. As soon as they got it back to their quarters, Martin tried to put it on the table, and predictably it slid off the table, across the floor, to the wall, and into the corner, where it sat now, presumably pointing toward Britt the Younger's apartment. Philip tried to put the arrow out of his mind. He turned around and walked to the far side of the room. He looked out into the ocean, which was hard to avoid, as one entire wall of the room was a window directly into the sea. He looked out into what would have been a mass of solid black at this time of night, if not for a school of fish that swam by, visible in the light from their room. Philip thought back to the day before, when he and Britt had gone out in that submersible and nearly been killed. He remembered how he had put off leaving until the last second in hopes of saving her life, just to have her save his instead. He grimaced and turned around, walking back to the far end of the room. The arrow was still there, pointing to wherever Britt was. He pictured her in danger, then quickly tried to put the image out of his mind. He replaced it with the image of Britt, safe in her bed. He quickly tried to put that image out of his mind. Finally, he announced that he was going to check on Britt. Martin offered to come along, but Philip didn't hear him, since the door was already swinging shut behind him. Philip rang Britt's doorbell. After a moment, Nick opened the door, smiling.
"Hello, Philip,"
Nick said.
"I expected we'd see you this evening. Please come in."
Philip entered and found Britt's living room empty. Nick explained.
"Britt's had a rough few days. She decided to go to bed early."
"Oh," Philip said. "Look, I don't want to disturb her. If you told me, I'd have just left a message. You said she was expecting me."
Nick said,
"I said I was expecting you. Don't worry, she's still reading. I'll go get her. Please make yourself comfortable."
Philip sat uncomfortably on the front edge of a chair. He heard Nick walk down the hall and knock on a door. Britt said,
"What do you need, Nick?" "Philip's here."
Philip could hear the smile in Nick's voice. Britt said,
Tell him I'll be right there."
Nick leaned around the corner from the hall, smiled at Philip for a long moment, then said,
"She'll be right out."
Almost that instant, Philip heard a door open, and Britt the Younger emerged around the corner.
"Here she is now,"
Nick said.
"Before I go, can I get either of you a drink?"
Britt and Philip both said no. Philip feared that if Nick smiled any harder, his face would fold in half. Nick excused himself. The door to his room closed with a purposeful click. Britt stepped from the entryway out into the room. She was dressed for comfort, not for having people see her. She wore a sweatshirt that had a drawing of an attractive woman in a skin-tight red and black court jester costume and clown makeup. Lettering beneath the drawing identified the clown as Harley Quinn, which meant nothing to Philip. The fact that the sweatshirt was oversized and hung off of her left shoulder meant quite a bit to him. Beneath the sweatshirt, she wore a pair of cotton shorts and heavy wool socks pushed down around the ankles. She took a couple of steps forward into the room and stopped when Philip met her halfway. Philip said,
"I just wanted to check up on you. You know, see how you're doing."
Britt chuckled lightly and looked away.
"That's sweet. Thank you, Philip. Please sit."
She motioned toward the couch. Philip sat as directed, and she sat next to him.
"I'm glad he came by,"
she said.
"You never really told me what happened in your meeting with the Elder."
"There was nothing to tell. I didn't have anything to say that she didn't already know, and she didn't have anything to tell me at all, or at least that she was willing to tell me."
Philip chose not to share Britt the Elder's comments about the Younger's attitude and future. Britt said,
"So she knows that someone's trying to kill me?"
"Yes."
"And she knows who it is and how they're going to try in the future?"
"So she says."
"And, of course, she's not going to tell us any of it."
Philip shook his head.
"She won't. She says she can't now because she didn't before."
"Yeah, I've heard that song and dance. It doesn't seem to occur to her that maybe she didn't before because she won't now."
Philip said,
"I can see why you find her so aggravating."
Britt put a hand on Philip's shoulder.
"Thanks. I'm glad someone does. Everyone else loves her."
"You too?"
Philip blurted. Britt looked at him sideways.
"You think I love her too?"
Philip did think that, just a bit, but he was not nearly dumb enough to say so.
"No, I'm saying that they love you, too. They all believe that you're the same person, so yes, they do love her, but they love you, too."
"What do you think of her?"
Britt asked, looking intently at Philip, waiting for his answer. Philip said,
"Free will is a really big deal to me, Brit. When I was a child, my parents tried to raise me in the church like they'd been raised, but it didn't work out. I could never accept the idea that God was all-knowing, all-powerful, had created us, and yet sent us tests. I couldn't see a logical way for him not to already know how we'd react, and when I asked the priests and my parents to explain it, all I ever got was, 'The Lord works in mysterious ways.' So I couldn't embrace their faith, and instead I embraced free will. I fell in love with the idea that nobody knows what anybody's going to do next, not even God. I'm the captain of my own destiny, and while I can't control what happens to me, I'm in total control of how I react to what happens to me."
Brit said,
"And then he found the file."
"Then I found the file," Philip said. "And it said that I was just a subroutine in a larger program. It bothered me at first, but then I realized that it changed nothing. As long as a certain amount of randomness and self-determination are built into the Philip subroutine, I still have free will. Then I went back in time and found that nothing I did had any effect on the future. Some took that to mean that everything we did had already been done before we were born, but I took it as proof that we had been forked off into a new branch of the program."
"A whole new future, there for you to create," Brit said. She instantly saw the appeal.
"Exactly. The ultimate expression of free will, a future that is ours to mess up. Of course, I won't be able to prove this until I live to see the year 1985 again. If it's different from the 1985 I came from and can now visit, it'll prove what Martin calls my big fork theory. Until then, it's a matter of faith. And that's how things stood for many years. I'd gotten pretty secure in my beliefs. Then I came here."
"And you met me." Philip smiled.
"Yes, I met you."
His voice lowered, his eyes narrowed, and he said,
"And I met her. To everyone else, she's just you many years later. To you, she's a constant thorn in your side. To me, she is a living, breathing refutation of my most cherished beliefs. It would be one thing to take a committed atheist and tell him that there is a God, but imagine if you could introduce him to God, and they drank high C together. Would the atheist find religion, or would he find reasons to disbelieve the evidence of his own eyes? And which of those reactions would be correct?"
"You must hate her."
Quickly and emphatically, Philip said,
"No, I don't hate her. I can't. She didn't do anything to me. She just exists. I'm the one torturing myself, not her. Other people can just accept that they don't know things and get on with their lives. And I can, too, about a lot of things. But not this."
Brit squeezed Philip's hand. Philip said,
"Besides, I couldn't hate her. When I look at her, I see you."
There was a long pause. Then Philip added,
"There's a bit of a resemblance."
They both laughed, harder than the joke really deserved. They went on to discuss many things, their childhoods, their families, their taste in music. All the things people discuss when they're saying anything but what's actually on their minds. The hour got late. Philip did not go back to his and Martin's quarters that night. Despite physical appearances, Brit and Philip were both middle-aged mentally, and this was not the first time either of them had slept over with someone. It was the first time they had slept over with each other, and later they would both remember it the way most people remember a first of this type, as having been absolutely wonderful, and technically, not that great.